Accession number 19902, Reel 1.
Wilkins, Reel 1. Where were you born, please?
In Leighton, London, E10.
Which year was this?
1921.
Did you grow up and have your schooling in Leighton?
In Walthamstow.
How old were you when you left school?
14.
So that must have been in 35?
Yes.
Did you get a job?
Yes, I was apprenticed into commercial art.
Is that what you were doing when war broke out?
Well, as soon as I was of military age, I was made redundant, and I worked on the barges then.
On the Thames?
Yeah.
Is that what you were doing when war broke out?
No, I was made redundant in 1940, and I worked on the barges then until I joined up.
Did you hear Neville Chamberlain declare war on Germany?
Yes, I was in the doctors, and the doctor was a naval reserve surgeon. And he said, "That's your lot," he says, "I'm off."
How did you feel when you heard the news of the war outbreak?
Well, it wasn't a surprise. It was something we've been expecting since 1938.
Were you in any bombing of London?
Yes.
Can you tell me about that, please?
My house in London, in Walthamstow, Westbury Road, was a direct hit on that.
Were you in it at the time?
No, I just joined the army with a friend, and I was out in a cinema, and we heard the bomb fall. When I come out, my house was flattened, and they was digging for me because my mother told them that I was always having a late night supper before I went to bed.
And that was in Walthamstow?
Well, yeah, 1941, September.
What number Westbury Road was that?
Oh, now you got me.
Well, doesn't matter.
No. Your memory goes.
How frightening was that?
Well, it wasn't frightening, but my mother and my sisters was in the shelter, and I'd built a blast wall in front of the air raid shelter, and that had all been blown in, and they had to dig them out of the shelter. And my sisters, at the shock of it, she lost her voice. She was paralysed. She was only four, and they had to dig all the earth out of her mouth.
Did she recover her speech?
No, she's never. It's never talked. She's funny, and she's gone. You know.
What date was that you your house was destroyed?
No, September 1940. I had the year wrong. It's 1940. That's right. Yeah.
What time of day was it?
Night time. There was what they called the Temple Mills Railway sidings, and they was always looking for them, and it was in direct line to the road I lived in, and the bombs used to fall. And when we was in Spain, there was a little midget woman, and she lived in Westbury Road, and I happened to mention I lived in Westbury Road, and she said, "Well, I lived there as a child." I said that I remembered her family because it was all midgets. I said, "The thing that always amazed me with your house, there was a piano downstairs, and it was blown upstairs, and it stood on the ledge, and it stood there for days and days and days. It was just suspended on the ledge." Her father used to play in various concerts and all that. He was a marvellous pianist, and they was all killed, all her family, so, except for the girl. But it was a coincidence that we should be sitting down, and She said she lived in Westbury Road, and I said, do you remember the air raid shelter? It was a sausage factory, Gillard's, on the end, and everybody used to go down this air raid shelter, you know.
Any other memories of the bombing at Walthamstow?
No, because I joined up. My mother, unbeknown to me, kept getting my call up deferred. I couldn't understand it. It was only when I went to the recruiting office and said, you know, I joined up with my friend, he's gone, and I'm still waiting to go. He said, well, your Member of Parliament has got deferred because your father's in hospital and your mother's been bombed out and got nowhere to live. And so
where were the family living after the bombing?
When I lived with one of my uncles, and they was bombed in turn. That was a turning just around the corner to them.
So can you tell me about doing the basic training in the army, please?
Yes, I joined up in 1941 into the artillery. I'd done 10 weeks basic training. I was on invalidation leave in November 1941, and we went to Africa first of all, and then Japan came in the war, and we were sent to Bombay.
Where did you do the basic training?
In Aldershot.
What was that like?
Well, quite. You was on the move, you know. On parade, just got upstairs, changing out of full battle dress, and you had to be on parade at once in PT kit, and everything was. We was up on the top floor of the barrack block, and you was up and down stairs. The last three members on fatigue, so you was running up and down. You was on the move. I had fairly long hair. I had 3 haircuts in one day. So it was quite short, and it was all square bashing. In those days, you got called all sorts of names. You marched along like a load of pregnant nuns and things like that.
Did you resent being called these names?
No. As a youngster, I was only 19. It was quite exciting. But then I got posted up to North Wales to the 82nd Anti-Tank Regiment, which was used to be the Royal Welsh Fusiliers, and they converted them to an anti-tank regiment, and we went abroad then. I didn't know anybody, because they said I was too young to go abroad. Took me off the troop ship, and someone fell down the gangway and broke both his legs. So the military police put me on board again then.
Whereabouts in North Wales did you join this anti-tank unit?
Hollywell.
What was your job with the regiment?
I was a wireless operator, driver operator, signaller.
Can you tell me about going abroad?
Yes, we left Liverpool. It was all on fire when we sailed out of Liverpool. I think it was late November, I think it was, and it was a dark grey day, and we sailed out, and we were shattered all the way to Sierra Leone by one of these Focke-Wulf planes, you know, and we had quite a lot of warships in the convoy, and it was a resolution, quite a few battleships and that, and we went through the Bay of Biscay, and all the gun crews on the ship were seasick. So they asked for volunteers to man the anti-aircraft defences. I was on a forward turret in a gun pit there, and the wind was so strong I stuck my head round the gun shield and it snapped the strap of my steel helmet and blew it away. That shows how rough it was. And
were you comfortable about this ship? Or?
I wasn't seasick. I was, but down below deck, we was in, I think it was D or E deck, right below the water line, and all you could see, of course, was all in hammocks there, was the kit come out of the lockers and china, and it was all rolling about on the deck, and what they call the heads in the Navy, that was all overflowing, the toilets, you know, latrines, and I was glad to be up on duty, because down below decks, it was terrible.
Where did this ship eventually end up?
Well, we landed at Durban.
What happened to you there?
Well, we went into camp there, a staging camp, and then we heard that Japan had come into the war. All our equipment had gone on to the desert, and the advance party was in the desert. So we was put on a... What's the name of the ship? Something Bay. It was a sister ship to the Jervis Bay, but it was an Esperance Bay. It was called. That's it. And that was a really old ship. But we went from there to India, and we landed in, I think it was about the 1st or 3rd of January.
And were conditions in the Esperance Bay just as bad?
Yes, it was. It was a very, very old cargo ship, you know. But
all the guns of the unit were in Egypt?
Yeah. Mm.
Mm. What kind of guns were those?
2-pound anti-tank guns. Which was all the way out, whereas in... having lectures saying that the life of an anti-tank gun in the desert was 12 seconds.
Why?
Well, because a 2-pounder had a battle range of 400 yards. A German tank could pick you off like nobody's business, so we wasn't sorry not to go to the desert.
So you landed at Bombay?
Yeah, landed at Bombay.
What do you remember of that?
Smells, and we went up to Pune, and it was still peacetime conditions in India, and they wouldn't let us out the barracks in Pune because we were deemed to be too scruffy.
What were you doing at Pune?
Well, we had to be re-kitted because we had no. And then we were sent down to Calcutta on a train, and was loaded onto a ship in Calcutta docks, and was sailing for Rangoon, and the Japanese set fire and all that, so they had to turn back.
This was the whole of your unit, was it?
Well, the advance party.
Do you remember which NCO an officer you were under at that time?
No, I've been racking my brains, haven't I, to single names, but it's so long ago.
So you were actually on the voyage to Rangoon?
Yeah, and...
when you turned back to Calcutta?
Yeah. Mm.
Were you at sea very long from Calcutta?
I can't say. It's not a long journey, really. It's about to say.
How did you feel about not landing at Rangoon?
Well, as I say, as a young man, you're disappointed, but you want to get into action, but...
And then what happened when you got back to Calcutta?
Well, they turned our regiment and amalgamated it with the 24th, which was a light AK-AK regiment, and we had two batteries of AK-AK guns and two batteries of anti-tank guns. And the other half of the regiment, which was the 82nd, went up in the 17th Indian Division. So I left a 205 anti-tank battery and 284 anti-tank battery, which I was in. We was put into the 24th.
So what was the full name of your unit then?
Well, it's a 24th AK-AK anti-tank regiment.
And what was your job with it then?
Well, as a driver operator.
What were you driving?
Well, it was a Jeep. You know, we used to lay lines, and also had the 22 sets, radio sets. You know.
What rank did you have at this time?
Well, I was just a gunner, but I was on the second campaign in Central Burma. I was Lance Bombardier.
So you were now in a new unit,
yeah,
in Calcutta. What was it like in Calcutta?
Well, we was in training, jungle training we was doing. Then we went up to Ranchi, and we done training there, long route marches and all this sort of thing. And then we was shipped from Ranchi up to Madras. And the rumours was that we was going to Ceylon. But instead of that, we went all the way down to the Arakan, and the 7th Division moved into the Arakan in September 43. And... the heavy equipment couldn't get over the pass. They had to rebuild, make a road through the pass because the tanks couldn't get over or anything like that.
But you'd spent about a year in India.
Training, yeah.
Did you see any civil disturbances?
Oh, yes. We was on duty in Calcutta when they put Gandhi in jail. We was on duty. We... on the railway stations, we used to go on the, used to put an armoured tender in front of the train with searchlights and wire netting, and used to go down the line because they was pulling all the civilians off of trains and cutting their heads off and goodness knows what, you know, it's quite...
Cutting their heads off?
Of the white people on the trains, you know, and carrying them about on spears and sticks.
Did you see any of that?
No, but in Calcutta itself, we was called out. We used to be on 24-hour standby. You had to sleep in all your kit, and as soon as the klaxon went, you jumped into these three tanners and you was taken into Calcutta because they set fire to all the police stations, these Sanas, you know, which was the local police, they were terrible. They burnt all these poor Indian policemen to death, and the students used to get these people, they used to raid the liquor shops. And we was called out on the Maidan in Calcutta, which is a massive place. And I think there was a mob of about 10,000 people there. The Indian police charged first, then the mounted police used to charge, then they have what they called the armed police, who had these smoothbore rifles which would fire. And if that didn't work, then we fired, you know, you aim one volley high and one volley low. And then you had to sort of move forward, advance at the high port sort of thing.
And that was on the Maidan in Calcutta?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Was that just on one occasion?
Oh, no, we was on another job we had, which we thought was horrible. We had to escort the Mem Sahib's shopping. When they wanted to go shopping, we had to escort them. And we found we was wanted by the people. Then before that, we were scum, but as soon as the riots started, they all wanted to invite us into the houses.
Did you get invited into the houses?
Yes, we went to a jute mill on the Hooghly, and we was invited there for a weekend. We had quite a nice weekend there, you know, with the sobs.
What kind of entertainment did they give you?
Well, we had a wish drive and dancing and all that sort of thing.
Was the Indian on the street friendly or unfriendly towards you?
Well, why you was in a lot of the chaps used to wear civvies, you know, and go about, but I think we was hated. If they could rob you or cheat, they would, you know. So we wasn't liked.
Did you ever come to any harm yourself in India?
No. Then we were stationed at Fort William then, that's in Calcutta. It was the border regiment and us. And we trained auxiliary Indian, I think it was the Calcutta Prudency Battalion. We trained them in radio operations and all that sort of thing. They had these little old armoured cars and all that.
The Calcutta what battalion?
Prudency. There was auxiliary Anglo-Indians. They was all Anglo-Indians.
Calcutta Presidency?
Yeah. Then we, a rather comical thing, one of these little Anglos, he was Mackay his name was. He said, where do you come from? I said, London. He said, I've got relations living near there. I said, where's that? He said, Manchester. So he invited me and a couple of other chaps to the family house. I was introduced to the father and all the family in various degrees of shades. I said, I haven't met your mother yet. He said, oh, that's her serving. Yeah, it was sort of shame, you know, it was shame to there. But the sergeant major of this unit, he was an old sweat, you know, he'd done 30-odd years in the army and stayed in India, and he was an instructor, and he said, it's a little bit of the tar brush, he said.
And so you were alongside the border regiment when you were doing these civil disturbance duties, were you?
No, that was after these civil disturbances. It was mainly North Staffs and South Staffs and the Warwicks was all in there.
How did you get on with the border regiment?
Oh, quite well, but Tigger had asked, because we was, as I say, I was on a signal course there. They had done one parade Sunday and one parade Thursday. If the Sunday parade was okay, they didn't parade anymore because they're still under peacetime. Yeah.
So you were part of 17 Division, were you?
No, 7th, but the 82nd, which was my original unit, went to the 17th Indian Division. We went into 7th, and we, which was formed on the Northwest Frontier.
Now, you were just about to tell me about going into Burma, into the Arakan.
Oh, yeah, well, we was building, chopping roads through the jungle, and we were all stripped to the waist for the tanks to come through. And all of a sudden, we was all told to put our shirts on because Louis Mountbatten had come to pay a visit. So we all had to put our shirts on. We had the propaganda talk. And then...
What impression did he make?
Well, he's quite well respected, but then I and three other operators were sent up on top of the Mayu range to relay signals because the valley of the Mayu range signals couldn't get over the mountain. So we used to take the messages down in code because we never knew what they was, and relay them back down to this side of the range. We was up there. It was quite exciting, all the wild animals, and we shot a lynx or some sort of cat come into our tent, and we gave it to two boys to cart away. They got down the track, and a panther jumped on them and took the carcass away.
And so you were in a party on top of the Mayo Range?
Yeah.
How many were in your party?
Four of us. We used to, after a 1500 weight, used to bring our batteries up, and we had to, as far as you could get, and then we had to carry them up on, you know, to our, we had this 22 set.
What rank was the senior man in charge of the four of you?
Well, we were sort of just signalers, you know.
So there was no sergeant?
No.
And what were your living conditions like?
Well, we was just living it rough, you know. We had we just slept on the floor, and we had what they called a sort of a mat sort of thing, like the Indians used to have. We used to lay that out on the floor and sleep on it. And had your have a sack as a pillow sort of thing, or when you wrapped your boots up in your jumper sort of thing.
Could you keep healthy?
Oh yeah, I did have a lot of malaria on the hurricane. I think I had about, I was evacuated three times from the hurricane with malaria.
Weren't you taking something against it?
Well, we didn't get them first of all. They hadn't brought the Mepoquin out in those days. It would, because I had the first bout of malaria at Ranchi. We were doing a 200-mile route march. And after the regiment went down with malaria, and they even diagnosed me as having dengue fever, but I had malaria. I think I had about 12 doses of malaria.
So you were doing this job on the top of the Mayo Range.
Yeah.
Was there any danger from the enemy there?
No, we never even thought about it. We were more concerned about the wild animals, you know, snakes. And because we lifted up this packing case when we had the final message that we could go over the pass, and there was a whacking great green snake under this packing case.
So you got the message you could go over?
Yeah, it took us 8 hours because up on the what they call mush interference, being a lot of iron ore in the mountains, the signals of the night, it took hours.